This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
Corey Richens' defense team, Kathy Nestor, Wendy Lewis, and Alex Ramos, has been surgical in attacking the prosecution's case. They've exposed contradictions in witness testimony, resurfaced questions about the investigation's integrity, and highlighted critical forensic tests that were never performed. But the prosecution still has witnesses to call, and the defense hasn't even begun their own case. I'm wondering if they stole one of the things that we brought up on the show here the other week, hair follicle testing, because that was brought up as an interesting point the other day. And I think the other week when we were talking about it, why didn't anyone do hair follicle testing? Because that could really show us a track record here, because it's like rings on a tree. It would show us if he had been an active user of fentanyl for a period of time, or if this was an extreme one-off. The testing wasn't done. They made a big point of that.
I felt like Ramos was watching us.
I think there's been so many damn cases where we bring it up here and the next day it's going on out there. I do wonder about that. But it's a good point that was made, because it really could answer a lot of questions. Yeah. And for one side, it's not going to be good. We don't know which side, though, because we don't know what that test is going to show. And since it was never done, it was never ordered, along with a whole bunch of other tests that were never ordered. It's out in the ether, and the defense is using that as saying, see, you didn't test this. If you're so, you know, concerned that this is, you know, that this was something that she did, why didn't we do this test? How damaging do you think that was, or how helpful do you think that was to either side?
Well, I think that that posing the question was very helpful for the defense, because mm-hmm. I think that's going to sit with the jurors, because I think if the point of this thing, like any trials, to get to the truth, not mm-hmm. to secure a conviction, right? We're trying to get to the truth in these cases. And that would have been a way for them to potentially achieve that goal. Mm-hmm. Because it's not as if the state of Utah did not know what their defense was going to be.
Yeah.
This thing was highly litigated for 2.5-3 years. And I'm talking mm-hmm. highly litigated.
Yeah.
And it was Sky Lazaro prior to Nestor and Lewis. There was a lot of pretrial motions that were filed in this thing. So there was no secret that the defense was going to be saying that, look, Eric had a drug problem, you know, and it stems from his addiction to pain pills. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it continued. And we know that there's a witness out there that's going to testify that he was a user in high school, you know, that he popped pills back then. And, you know, whether or not the jury's going to give that any weight, who knows? But
yeah,
the point being is that they knew it. The state knew that this was a potential avenue for the defense to take. And for them to say, well, you know, we've got this ability to be able to test the follicles to see whether or not that holds any water, I think casts a little more shade on the state that they were afraid of getting the answer, because yeah. he could turn around and bite him in the ass. Mm-hmm. Because it had it come back, well, like, yeah, I mean, it shows there was fentanyl in his system, like even beyond February, when they're claiming that she tried to poison him with the sandwich, yeah. you know. But it's like, you know, if it goes back, because I don't know. And Ramos was getting into it a little bit in terms of getting into the weeds in terms of how far back it can go. He threw out 3 months. I had heard that it can go back a little further.
I did some research on it the other day and dug pretty deep. You could exhume him today. You could probably get fairly accurate testing. That would show us definitively whether he was an active user through the course of that strand growing, basically.
Now, the interesting legal question about that is, say she gets convicted, say the direct appeal fails, say they go into post-conviction act world, and that's where you can bring in newly discovered evidence.
Boom.
Now, I don't know that they would be able to argue, the defense, that is newly discovered, because they had access at the time where, theoretically, you know, I mean, Nestor and look, these two attorneys have been appointed. She was found to be indigent after Lazaro left. And, you know, but you've got the situation where Nestor, if they have to go hat in hand to the court and say the county's got to pay for this testing, did they even make an attempt to do that? You know, well, so like that concept where in terms of being able to go in, newly discovered evidence is always viewed through that lens by the courts, whether or not it's actually newly discovered.
Would that be based on who's going to pay for it, though? Or like, let's say her family just says, we want to go do this testing. We'll pay for it. Then here's the results, everybody. That's new evidence. We didn't have this information before. Could we have gotten it? Sure. But the state didn't have to pay for it.
Well, that's the legal question, though.
That would be the legal. I don't know what that would be.
Yeah, because I mean, like you, go ahead, Robin.
No, I was just thinking too, I mean, it's a boy. I don't like giving, you know, any bad guys, and she's not a bad person yet, you know, the intelligence to do something so premeditated. But it's interesting because if we entertain the thought experiment that he actually had a drug habit ahead of time and that this was, you know, a mistake on his part, he overdosed by mistake, and if she's any part of this, you know, it's actually trying to hide in plain sight by just exasperating something he's part of. But at the same time, though, her demeanor and her behavior of being unwitting to any of those problems is actually pretty congruent with if he did have a drug problem, she was not aware of it. But it would make sense if she was. But here's the counter to this again, getting all these different little data points to analyze this on is, if she thought that actually was a defense, why wouldn't she press for the hair follicles being tested?
Right.
I mean, I would. I mean, seriously. I mean, so here you are. You're her, and you do a great job of being her family in those shoes from the defense angles. And if you think this is a possibility to exonerate you or explain away what happened, why wouldn't you make a full court press, even to the press, saying to do this?
100%.
Yeah, it makes 100%. A lot of sense.
It's that thing where, you know, that you'll see sometimes in cases where neither side necessarily wants to know the answer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like we had it in Richard Allen where DNA that was an unknown male profile and neither side did anything with it. And it was blowing my mind because I was saying the same thing. I'm like, if I'm Allen, if I didn't do it, I'm screaming at my attorneys, why aren't you testing that unknown male profile? Because I guarantee you it ain't mine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, this is a little more far afield than that. But I mean, it's a legitimate question.
Just think of all the blind spots that would answer by just testing the hair follicle. And I'll tell you, I'm with you. You know, Dr. Christensen did an amazing job.
Great on job.
And here's one, you know, it's actually, you know, on the behavior side of things, here's why I thought he did an amazing job. Besides the facts, the details, his presentation, when you listen to that call, you heard his level of care and professionalism when he said, it's no problem at all. Call me anytime. That was someone who's about his business, very pragmatic, very, very, very objective with delivering bad news. And I mean, he was so well presented, both himself and the content. I thought he did a decent job of talking about this with his limited resources and limited things he did have, you know, between what was in his stomach, what's not in his stomach, and then the mix of the other compound in there and how this fell right in between, whether it was an addict or not an addict, a one time off. It really is too bad they didn't do that hair follicle. Wish they should.
I know. And I mean, it was one of those things. I just thought he was. And I said it during our live, I'm like, for Corey Rishens to be able to call the office of the medical examiner, and we're talking about the medical examiner in Utah, and get him on the phone was amazing to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't believe she got him on the phone.
I know.
Well, what about just the modality of doing that? What, I mean, that's an interesting thing to do. Are you calling the medical? I mean, it's we're just thinking in normal, I know it is normal, but if you are concerned that, let's just put it in the perspective of where she might have been sitting at that moment in time. If you're concerned that someone may be looking at you for suspected murder of your husband, are you going to be raising your hand in any way, shape, or form to ask questions and get on the radar of anything?
Yeah.
Would you?
I am. Remember, this is 8 months in the probate battle, Tony. I highly recommend you dig into some of those pleadings, man.
Okay.
the family and Corey were at war.
Okay, so that's why she was doing that. Okay, that's what I'm trying to understand. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just trying to go, why is she doing it? Like, what's the modality? Why is she making this phone call? Because to me, it's like, if you're trying to stay off the radar or something, I don't know that I'd be making the phone call. I don't know that I'd be raising my hand if I did it. That's like for in the Corey camp of that actually points to more innocence than it does guilt. I
agree, frankly, either way.
Yeah.
Well, I hear what you're saying. And logically, that makes sense that if she did do it, you'd think that you wouldn't touch that with a 1,000,000-foot pole. You could obviously make the other argument that, well, I'm going to do it. Yeah. So it makes me look like I'm just curious what's going on, because I know the family thinks that I killed him.
I might not also write a children's book about it either if I don't want attention at me. And so clearly
she's doing research for the book. Yeah. She wants to be accurate.
Clearly having attention at her wasn't a problem. She was all good with that, no matter how you splice it. And if we look at it this way or that way, or this personality or that type of personality, it can go down different paths. Robin.
I did look up, typical calls that are made to medical examiners, the typical questions that are asked. And she was really in the ballpark, and that goes to what you both your points earlier on. Her ability, whether she did or not, to compartmentalize is really, really strong, and everything she's doing is pretty congruent with what you'd expect her to do. But it's so easy to have her confirmation bias one side or the other. But it was within the norm.
Let's talk about the drugs that were procured by Corey from person to person to person to person. It's not really up for debate here that she procured drugs. That I think is well established. The evidence is there. The texts are there. The chain is there. It's more so a question of what did she procure? What did she think she was getting? And if you take the name of the drug out of this whole equation, which seems to be the big thing everyone's arguing in court, is the semantics of, well, is it fentanyl or not? Because he died of fentanyl. Well, guess what? In all of the communications, nobody's talking about fentanyl, but it also they're talking about shit they don't know what they're talking about either. You have Corey asking for propofol, basically, but she just describes it as the Michael Jackson stuff. She doesn't ask for it by name. She just wants the something even stronger, as she puts it. At the end of the day, does it matter what they all called it? Because I don't think any of them were either in the right mindset to know what the hell they were dealing with or getting. They were street drug deal. It was from a street drug dealer who also admitted on the stand that, yeah, guess what? Fentanyl's laced into a lot of this shit too. I didn't specifically sell fentanyl. I didn't think I was selling fentanyl, but it turns out a lot of the stuff over here called Oxy is actually fentanyl. So that's in the mix. Does it matter? Does it matter that Corey didn't know it was fentanyl? Does it matter that the dealer didn't know it was fentanyl? But at the end of the day, it looks like somebody mixed some fentanyl into the Oxy and then it ended up in his system. Does the semantics matter other than trying to confuse a jury, which I get, that's the strategy here. But at the end of the day, she wanted the stronger stuff. She got stronger stuff. Does it matter what it truly is or if she knew what it truly was?
Yes, of course.
How? Okay.
It's aggravated murder requires, it's a very specific statute. And, you and I talk about this all the time. The state has to prove each and every element of that statute. And if you pull that statute up, it has to be intentionally or knowingly procuring. And they're going under the poison statute is what I call it. In terms of she has to know, just getting some shit off the streets ain't it.
Well, but she's asking for it as the Michael Jackson stuff.
Bullshit. The propofol, like people keep saying that it was a cocktail. It wasn't just that. It was benzos, dude.
I'm asking this because she asked for the Michael Jackson. She wants the Michael Jackson stuff is what she said. Allegedly.
If you believe Carmen.
Okay, so that's the allegation she asked for, basically. When someone is asking for the Michael Jackson stuff, it's not they're going to ask for stuff that's going to make them go open up an amusement park in their backyard. It's shit that's going to kill them.
That's not what killed him. It was a cocktail of benzos and the
but she ball. Asked for stronger stuff for that purpose. So does it, again, it's does it matter if she even knows what the hell it is? She's asking for something that's going to kill her husband, basically.
I don't construe it that way.
How do you not?
Because Propofol is not what killed him. It was
it's not.
It's like saying, like, I want the Matthew Perry drug.
But you gotta, and then somebody's like, I'll give you shit that kills you. And whatever it is, it is.
It's not going to kill you. Like, fentanyl is a fucking poison, man.
It is, but she didn't know what she was talking about. She was asking for something to kill her husband with.
Let's go to intent. What's the intent of her purpose?
That's the purpose, yeah.
That is what the state has to prove.
Right.
And that's why it has to be. Because look, in 2022, we all were hearing about everybody. If you were paying any attention at all to what was going on in the world, everyone was dying from this fentanyl that was being like introduced into the black market drug market. Mm-hmm. And like, so in my world, the intent, which has to be intentional or knowing, it can't be, I just need some shit. I want enough Roxy 30s that I'm going to crush 70 of them up.
But that's
into
not what
shit.
She said. She asked for the Michael Jackson.
That's not what, like, you're taking what Carmen said, who I did not find to be a credible witness, as gospel. I mean, if you're going to give that the weight, then give it the weight. But to me, the Michael Jackson drug, I had to Google it. I had to Google and see what the.
And I know she didn't get propofol. I know she. And you couldn't get propofol. Nobody's like dealing propofol on the street.
I want to go back to the intent, Bob. So, what I'm curious about on the defense side is, so I think everyone's saying that that there was a purchase of drugs, correct?
Yeah.
That,
all right. 100%, right.
So now defense has to. What do you think defense is going to do to show her the intent she had in the purchase? That's what I'm.
They don't
curious
have to
about
do anything. You know that, Robin. What is the state going to do to prove that was her intent? Because what the defense is going to argue is that he had an addiction problem and that he was the one asking her to procure. He had an addiction to pain pills.
But she didn't say that, though. I mean, so that's what I mean. So in order for the defense to use that she procured it for him, she'd have to say, I procured it for him because he's got an addiction problem. Is that what you think she's going to say?
Theoretically, if she takes a stand. Like, I mean, the problem for her is the walk the dog letter.
Right.
So many landmines for her to take the stand.
Right.
It's, you know, like,
and that's why I thought that's why, you know, and I get Tony's point on this as well, is like, it doesn't matter what they bought. She had an intent to get this. And so if the intent wasn't murder or the intent wasn't to give it to him without his wittiness, what was the intent?
But that's the state's burden to prove entirely.
Yeah. But still the jury's still going to hear it.
But yeah, they're going to hear it. But the state has to prove that her specific intent. So aggravated felony or aggravated murder is a specific intent.
Right, right. I understand.
Can't be, you know, well, maybe like if he has too much, he died. It had to be, I'm procuring a poison, which I know will kill him. And then so I used it to kill him.
So again, then my question is this, how do you, because again, this is not my area when dealing in the courtroom, obviously, you know, so then how do you present it and the instructions you give to the jury to not then make that leap that, you know, so she bought it. We definitely confirm she bought the drugs and these are illegal drugs or whatever they are. And you can't come to any conclusion because the prosecution didn't do it right, that she bought them to give to her husband. I mean, what kind of instructions came to do a jury to not make that leap on their own?
I mean, in terms of the instructions, they're going to get whatever instructions they use in Utah. You know, they're pattern jury instructions that they use. So they'll use the instruction that they give to every jury in every homicide case. So whatever that is, and I haven't pulled it up yet on our feed, like we do that close towards the end of trial, but whatever it's going to be is it's going to say that they have to prove each and every element. They're going to say that she had to knowingly or intentionally, and it's either or, had to procure something that she knew was going to kill her husband and that was her intent. Kill her husband.
Right.
The problem for the state here is the investigation was so shitty.
Right.
The common theme that we see through case after case case after case, because, you know, you have the first cop who walks in and she tells the story about the Moscow mule, yet this cop doesn't see fit to say, all right, I'm going to go look in the sink to see if the cups are there. I'm going to look at the bedstead. Because, like, Robin, right. I have to think, as a former FBI guy, you get a guy who's saying, you get anybody who's saying that to you in their initial interview, the first things they're saying to you, you're like, okay, well,
take that.
Let's start looking around for these cups.
Right.
You know, where are those cups? Like, I'm not accusing you of anything, but what exactly did you serve them the drink in? Oh, well, you know, the copper mugs that you serve Moscow mules in. Mm-hmm. And where are those? Oh, those are in the sink. I'm gonna go ahead and grab those, put my gloves on, drop them into an evidence bag, and we're going to test those to see if we can find any trace of ethanol or fentanyl, rather. And, you know, because it was interesting in terms of his blood, when they did the testing on the blood, they found no alcohol in the blood.
Right.
They found ethanol in the body, but as Christensen said, the body produces ethanol, and it produces it from all kinds of things.
Yep.
So that's not indicative of the fact that he had the alcohol in his body. So it doesn't corroborate what the state's theory is that she dosed the fentanyl,
right,
or dosed the drink. I mean, so it's challenging for the state, man. It really is, because of the gaping holes in the investigation on the front end. It goes to what you were saying earlier, Robin, which is, this is going to be death by a thousand paper cuts for them.
Yeah.
It's going to create this arc where either the jury's going to buy the narrative what the state has created, because the state wasn't there, just like the defense was there. Nobody really knows what happened. Like, all that we can do as attorneys on both sides is take the evidence and craft a theory based on what we believe might have happened. And we go and try to sell that to the jury. And whichever side sells it more authentically to the jury, to where the jury's like, I just can't overlook that fact. And yes, it's all circumstantial, but it all makes sense to me. And typically, the way that it works in this country, that defendant in that chair gets convicted.
I got one follow-up to this, Tony. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
It can chime. So Bob, so you know how to connect with the defense a lot. You know, you're working with these families. I mean, so put on your theory hat. What do you think, you know, might have been going through her mind to purchase those drugs?
Well, if I'm Corey, and it goes back to that question, how do I get it in? Right. If I'm Corey, I'm saying Eric had a drug problem and Eric had asked me to procure them. And you can't even show that I went to the house to pick them up, that it was Eric. He asked me to call Carmen, because I knew from my relationship with her over the years that she had an addiction problem. And, you know, I knew that she had access to a dealer, because that's how she was getting her drugs. And so I hit her up at the behest of my husband, because he wanted these pills. The other part of it where, you know, I don't know if the defense is going to take the walk the dog strategy, wherein they're going to say that he was procuring these drugs through some cartel / rancher at some place down in Mexico that he went to. I have no idea. I mean, to me, the safer argument that I'm trying to make, if I'm the defense, is that Eric had a pill problem, which then still goes back
to the
issue of, why didn't we test the hair follicle?
Yeah.
Because it either proves or disproves that theory immediately. It's a fascinating case, man.
Could they admit anything like that at this point in the trial? If somebody said, let's go get a fucking hair.
I think if neither side were to object to it, potentially, because it's so late in the game.
Yeah.
It's so late in the game. And I don't know how long that testing takes. And
look,
we saw it in, frankly, I you know how I always go back to Richard Allen, but we had the hair that was wrapped around Abby's finger. There was a female hair, which they didn't fucking test for 7 years.
Let me get me going on Richard Allen, man. You and me, all of us are on the same sheet. That was
they didn't get the results until trial had started.
Yeah. They would tell us so much. And maybe that's just the card that Corey's going to keep in her back pocket if she gets convicted. And maybe it can be an appellate issue. Maybe. Who knows?
We'll see.
But it won't be
on direct appeal. It'll have to be post-conviction. You're stuck to the record. You know, only the things that happen at trial and pre-trial for your direct appeal. When she loses that, which I'm sure she would, ultimately that's where you get into that post-conviction. That's where you go after ineffective assistance of counsel claims, as well as, you know, newly discovered evidence. And then your battle is it newly discovered? You had access to that evidence at the time going into trial. Why didn't you test it?
Yeah.
You know, because that's what I'm saying.
Sure.
Defense had the ability to go to the judge and say, "Judge, I'm on bended knee here. My client's indigent. Mm-hmm. We want to get this hair tested because we feel that it's potentially exculpatory to our client." Yeah. And the judge is probably going to say, "All right, I'm going to give you some county funds. Have at it." So see how it plays out.
Would be very interesting. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube and our Substack. Love to get you weighing in on the Corey Richens trial.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.